Welcome to Tampa Bay FM's Synergy Connection, where life as you currently live it can be transformed into the life you've always dreamed of. Understanding your synergistic connections is the pathway to your emotional, physical, spiritual, and mental wellness. Let's begin connecting the dots. Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the Synergy Connection Show. I have as my guest today, Kristen Gieselin, who is a consultant, an intuitive, and a mindfulness mentor. She has catalyzed positive change for thousands of individuals and hundreds of nonprofit organizations, and she's available for personal and business consultations, mentoring, custom workshops, and presentations. So welcome back, Kristen.
Oh, thank you for welcoming me back, Lucy. It's great to be here. I love doing the show with you, and I'm really excited about our conversation today.
Well, we're going to be talking about spirituality. And I guess the first question out of the gate is going to be, what are spiritual empowerments? What does that mean?
Well, actually, yeah, I wanted to talk about sort of spirituality, intuition, and wellness, and how they relate to each other and how they are different. And the reason why this is important to me is that I see sometimes people are really strong in one area, but maybe not as strong in another area. Mm-hmm. And then they're not able to fully optimize that concept of synergy. And of course, going along with, you know, the living your best life theme. Mm-hmm. So they're just not quite able to do that because they don't have their, it's sort of like, you know, there's a few cylinders that are missing. or you get into a certain habit or pattern can be developed in one area that makes it hard to really grow another area.
So it's a little bit like what I always say that, you know, you can have a spiritual person and be missing the physical and maybe the mental, but they could be spiritual and they could be emotionally developed. And that's like a chair with two legs. It doesn't balance very well. So that's kind of what you're saying.
It is kind of what I'm saying. And I think there's some specific things that happen, particularly with people who do develop intuitive gifts that I think are sort of potential challenge areas that can be balanced with spirituality and continuing to focus on their physical and mental health.
What do you see out there yourself? I mean, you know, you've been in the spirit community, so to speak, for a long time now. And as you meet different people that are maybe psychic mediums, maybe they're physical therapists, maybe they're doing Reiki like I do. But what do you see as you're just observing?
I think the one thing I have noticed and seems to be reflected by some other people that I've talked to is that there are certain people who are just born with intuitive gifts. They come to this earth and from the time they're, you know, 5 or 7 or 8, oh, they're seeing that ghost over in the corner or whatever, you know, they just have it. It's just there. But they may not have the opportunity or the inclination to study or pursue spirituality at large. Mm-hmm. So the breadth of their understanding is pretty much within the domain of their own experience. Mm-hmm. And as gifted and fantastic as that may be, I don't know that it always allows that intuitive to give the same level of guidance that a person could give who had a little bit broader foundation.
Mm-hmm. So where would they maybe get that broader foundation?
Well, you know, there's so many places to learn and grow and develop. And, you know, in a lot of environments and communities, they actually have metaphysical colleges that focus, you know, expressly on sort of the link between spirituality and intuitive gifts, sort of that little land in between where the two are overlapping, where those two circles overlap. Or, you know, you could solidly study spirituality in either some kind of a mystery school or a tradition, you know, a wisdom tradition. Or, you know, a lot of people have a private spirituality as well, you know, that's nature related or creativity related. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it has to be one way, but it does need to be there, I think.
Yeah.
In order for a person who works with energy, either a Reiki type person or an intuitive medium, they need to be able to neutralize and detach from the energetic experiences that they share when they're doing their work.
Right.
And so sometimes that's not always, you know, easy if a person was just born with a gift and then later somehow their life circumstances say, I'm going to put that gift out there,
mm-hmm.
to have those things necessarily in place.
You know, you and I talked before this show about Casadega.
Yeah.
And for those of you out there who aren't aware of this little gem of a place, it is actually east of Orlando, and so from the Tampa area, it's about 3 hours. For those that are listening to it elsewhere in the United States or world, Orlando is fairly commonly known as a location in Florida where we have Disney and Universal and other kinds of amusements. And it is amazingly growing. I don't even know how they're doing it, because I hadn't been east of Orlando for years, and there's all of these high rises and unusual buildings that are out there. But Casadega is known as the spiritual community of the United States, and that surprised me a little bit. And it is definitely a sleepy village, just kind of in the middle of nowhere. But with Casadega, you're talking about educational opportunities. There are classes there all the time so that you can learn any particular skill that you maybe are feeling drawn to. They actually teach the classes. So anybody in Florida that feels that they have psychic skills, medium type skills, spirituality is coming out of your pores, you might want to check out Casadega, because it was a fun experience.
Right. And it's sort of like... some people pursue spirituality. You know, there's a lot of different reasons why people get interested in spirituality. Most either are raised in some kind of a tradition, mm-hmm. and then they carry that on to a greater or lesser extent, or they meet with some kind of crisis or situation in their either emotional world or their physical world that says, I'm experiencing pain. I need to learn how to understand myself and mm-hmm. the nature of reality at a different level.
Right.
So that's usually, you know, a sort of a launching point. But then mm-hmm. once people get going, you know, then they're just interested. You know, then they start to see, you know, they may be fascinated, interested, receive benefits, and then, you know, they continue to grow in that kind of a manner. So in the tradition that I practice, we are doing a spiritual practice, but we're also asking that our cities or our abilities, different abilities beyond what you might normally, you know, think about in terms of the intellect, be opened.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually asking for that. And in a sense, when you think about even Christian prayers or whatever, you're asking for guidance. Well, when you talk with most people about how do they receive guidance from their higher power, you know, they're not getting a radio message. You know, they're getting something is coming through at an intuitive level.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about connecting with what I would call something like the mastermind or the wisdom mind, which exists every place. And, you know, spirituality can be a doorway into that or not. You know, mm-hmm. some people who are interested in spirituality are not going to go heavily into the intuitive realm. You know, they're maybe just keep it sort of very personal. You know, they may use intuition, you know, mm-hmm. for their own personal benefit to a greater or lesser extent, you know, while other people find it, you know, once they sort of, I think, get involved, especially right now with this big upsurge in the divine feminine, it feels like there's sort of a wave of intuitive opening that's just, you know, spreading far and wide. And I guess that's sort of why I feel like it's important for people who are really going into their intuitive abilities not to forget to keep an eye on their spirituality, to keep an eye on their mental health, to keep an eye on their physical health.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, if they just go too far into that one direction,
right,
something is going to stop that process.
Right. You and I both have known some very gifted psychics. And Tess and I have talked a lot about chakras. You and I have talked about chakras. And when you have energetic centers or vortexes in the body, then all of them can become closed. And there are adrenal organs in every one of our chakras, which then can set up physical issues for that person. And quite often, the people that are so gifted in terms of their psychic abilities, their crown is open for information, their third eye or intuitive center is open, their throat is open, and most of the time, their heart is open. And it might stop right there. And so then they do develop physical issues, whether it's weight or health problems, as a way to kind of keep the world at bay, is the way I've sort of looked at it. It's like, okay, I can handle all of this, but I don't want to handle anything else. And so it just kind of stops there. And so I have always found that very, very interesting, which again is the reason I wanted to do the show, is the importance of understanding how to keep everything in balance so that we're healthy emotionally, we're healthy physically, we're healthy mentally, and we're healthy spiritually, so that we can bring it all together.
Right, so. Exactly. And so luckily, I had a friend in my life when I first started getting interested in Buddhism that sort of told me, you know, don't get the forest mixed up with the trees.
Uh-huh.
You know, don't let the bells and whistles of either spiritual insight or intuitive understanding confuse you don't get that confused with spiritual development.
Right.
Those are not exactly the same things. Because most of what we perceive, not all of it, but a lot of what we perceive in the typical, I would say, intuitive knowledge or medium realm is very much still phenomenal. And it's very closely related to the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we go to the more subtle and subtler energy levels, like when you go into more of the healing frequency, you know, that's when you're really starting to move above some of the human kind of chakra energy, mm-hmm. into a more subtle energy systems, right. into right. very subtle energies. So it's important at any of these levels to not have your ego attach as the practitioner, because it's never been, you know, about us in terms of our personality. Whatever gifts emerge and whatever healing abilities present, it is because we are been through fortunate circumstances better aligned with the true nature of reality,
mm-hmm.
that we have been able to get ourselves to clear off some of the junk. You know, whether that was conditioned beliefs from childhood, whether that was stuff we accumulated, bad karma from past lifetimes, that through some kind of process, through some kind of internal cleansing process that was either self-directed or came through connections with other healers or learning experiences or, you know, however it happened for us, we've been able to clear out some things. It's not that we're really doing something more than someone else could do. It's that we're actually, we've just sort of buffed that mirror up a little bit cleaner.
Right.
And that's not something that is constant or permanent. You know, that it's not like, oh, my mirror is clean now, that's good. No, 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 no. That is a process that has to be maintained.
Right.
Which means whatever you do to balance your chakras, back to the things we've talked about before related to mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And where mindfulness comes into this is that it's important to be mindful of all these different areas. And it doesn't mean that you can do all of these areas perfectly all the time.
Right. To me, it's a little bit like cleaning your house. All right, so, you know, being organized is something that I am. I'm a planner, and I'm usually very, very organized. But if I just focused on organizing things, and I didn't dust, I didn't clean the bathrooms, I didn't change the sheets, you know, I didn't go grocery shopping, I didn't pay the bills, then obviously there would be aspects of my life that would not be functioning very well. And so I liken it to that. It's like, your house is your body, and your body has to be taken care of in all aspects, not just one little part of it. So I don't know whether you see it the same way, but that's kind of the way I've always looked at it. And the other thing that I wanted to mention, you were talking about energy. When I do Reiki on somebody, When I first learned Reiki 20 years ago, I was so precise as to the moves, you know, and making sure that I was thinking, you know, the proper words that went with whatever move I was doing on the person, the position. Now it's like I just go, okay, hands, do your job. And they immediately become activated, for lack of a better word. They get extremely warm and people can feel the energy moving out of my hands onto them. And I don't think about anything at all. I usually just kind of go someplace like maybe the beach or maybe, you know, with waves of water moving in and out. But I'm not thinking about a single thing that is actually Reiki related. It's more just I know energetically that I am in alignment and that the person is receiving what they need to receive.
Right. You're trusting the process. Mm-hmm. You basically are really clear that mm-hmm. your little Lucy self is in the back seat mm-hmm. and you're opening up to the chi of the universe.
Exactly.
And that chi is flowing into the person. And because we trust and we believe that the universe has intelligence, mm-hmm. that energy is going where it needs to go in that person.
Exactly.
Because you've also made an agreement with that person mm-hmm. prior to the Reiki that this mm-hmm. is what is going to happen.
Exactly.
And to me, this is a really big part of any healing, is that connective process where you and the other person are making an agreement with we'll call infinite intelligence, mastermind, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. you know, God, whoever we're going to use, whatever word we're going to use. You've made an agreement that you're going to do this thing now.
Right. And this is how it's going to probably feel to you, but let's just see what happens.
Right.
And there you go.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I relate with that. You know, I received that Reiki 1 initiation, but I never mm-hmm. practiced Reiki actively.
And I've done Reiki on you, as I recall.
You have done Reiki yeah. on me. And it was very, I really enjoyed that because I think because I'm also very open. Mm-hmm. When you were talking to me about things, I was having interesting experiences. Like, mm-hmm. oh, I see colors around my knee and this one's blue and this one's that and blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You know, it was quite active and right. interesting, you know, because I'm also intuitive. So I was mm-hmm. perceiving what was going on with that energy a little bit right. while you were doing it, right. you know, so that right. was like, oh, that was interesting. The theta healing has a quality that's similar. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like when we go to theta, the practitioner goes into theta state. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're dropping out of our typical consciousness mm-hmm. and going into that different sort of meditative energy
right.
where our personality is not the driving force.
Not engaged.
No,
anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And especially, there's some conversation involved with theta healing, but then when I'm actually doing the energetic part, I'm quiet. Mm-hmm. And I'm observing mm-hmm. quiet and I'm observing.
Right.
And then spirit shows me stuff. Right. You know, we either get confirmations or I see things that say, oh no, now we need to look at this or we need to do that.
Right.
So, it's very dynamic, mm-hmm. you know, and that's sort of, to me, what, is engaging for me as a theta healer. And I think probably for you doing Reiki is you're in that observer mode and you may be present to witness things happening, but you're not doing it.
I'm not doing it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so it's fascinating, you know, and I'm honestly more excited about doing theta healing than I thought I would be when I learned how to do it. Mm-hmm. And as I've been doing it, I'm more engaged than I anticipated I would be. Mm-hmm. Simply maybe because of this whole phenomenon that we're talking about where it actually takes me to a place where I am also perceiving that more subtle energy, you know, that mastermind energy or mm-hmm. the God energy. So it's benefiting me also mm-hmm. while I'm doing the treatments. And I'm sure you feel the same way with the Reiki. Do you feel good after you do Reiki?
I do, because I think in the exchange of energy with mm-hmm. that individual who has requested it,
right,
you're also treating yourself.
Right.
And so that's happening. On a slightly different note, something that you and I did talk about early before we started the show was when I was at Casadega, there was this dog that belonged to an owner that was actually going to do a reading for me. And I stuck my head in a little bit early, and the dog was in a living room with somebody who had already had a reading. And so I, you know, asked, are you waiting? And she said, no. She said her mother was finishing up. And so I said, well, I'll just wait out here on the porch. So I closed the door, and the dog started literally yodeling. And I was like, oh my gosh, he is not going to be able to finish this reading with the dog doing that. So I thought, okay, I have no choice, because animals can sense my energy at least. And so I opened the door again, and he stopped and just looked at me. And I said to this young lady, I said, well, I guess I'm going to wait in here because I think he wants to be next to me. And so I went over to another couch, sat down. Sure enough, the dog jumped up beside me, put his head in my lap. That was the end of it. And we waited until her mother was finished. So animals do perceive energy very, very, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. I think if you're neutral, the animal's probably neutral. If you are stressed or angry or have a negative, they sense that. If you're sad, they really sense that. And so it's just, it's very interesting to me how people that are listening to the show might be aware of what are their animals actually saying to them about their energy. So I don't know. You have animals.
I do. And I noticed that my cat likes my energy more now than in the past.
Okay.
My cat, and he's older too, so maybe he feels a greater need to receive, you know, more energy from mm-hmm. me than he did when he was younger. The thing that's funny in my work is that my dog and I are quite close. And whenever he feels my energy joining with someone that I'm working with doing theta healing, he gets a little jealous.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I have actually, when I was receiving like healing energy, when I was getting a massage in my house, I had to send him theta healing to get him to lay down. Because otherwise he was interfering. He was humping the massage therapist because he wanted to be in charge. He wanted to get control of the situation because he felt, oh no, that other person was joining with me energetically mm-hmm. and he likes to do that. He doesn't mm-hmm. want someone else doing that.
So he does have a jealous streak.
The dog does. He does. Not in any way like in a regular interaction, mm-hmm. but particularly more when there's an energy, you know, like a
casual. An energy exchange.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's very conscious of that when there's a deeper energy exchange going on. It could be, it's usually when I'm doing something therapeutic or I'm having a deep conversation with somebody, or like if I'm on the Facebook with one of my intuitive friends and they're doing cards for me, mm-hmm. then he also gets involved.
So he feels that exchange.
Yes, he does. He absolutely does. Yeah. Okay. And I've actually looked into animal psychics to see if I could find someone that could communicate well enough with him for him to understand there is not a threat. And the only one I found was, well, I contacted one, and anyway, it hasn't quite come together yet, but I have looked into it mm-hmm. because it would just be easier for him and for me if he was aware that he is the only dog mm-hmm. and he has a special place. And mm-hmm. I tell him that, but somehow it's not completely going in. I don't know. You know,
there was a story. I probably heard it maybe a year ago now, and maybe you have heard it too, but there was a Black Panther named Diablo, and this was such a cool story because he was a rescued cat, and he wouldn't eat, he wouldn't come out of his little cave, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with him, and so they brought an animal whisperer, and she sat outside of the fence and communicated with him, and he explained that there were two cubs that he had been very attached to, and he didn't know what happened to those cubs, and he hated his name. He did not feel like he was a devil, which is what Diablo translates to. Mm-hmm. And so he was asking to have his name changed to reflect who he really was, and he wanted to know what happened to those two small cubs. And as soon as she understood that and communicated that to his new owners, they changed his name. And they told him, you know, they found out what happened to the cubs, and they were in a much better place, and they were happy. And so he relaxed, and he became a totally different cat. And so it's just so interesting to me how animals will communicate with you if you take the time to listen.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. Yeah. I love that. I have heard that story. It's marvelous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that may have been one of the first things I heard that was related to the animal communication mm-hmm. world, which is mm-hmm. something that fascinates me,
oh,
actually.
I love it.
Yeah,
I
it's very interesting. So I wanted to say a couple more words about the concept of being mindful related to spirituality, intuition, and mental and physical wellness. We are very busy people today.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are working a job and maybe a side gig. So keeping an eye on everything and having everything like a perfect justice scales in balance all the time is not really a realistic expectation. And it's not a realistic expectation.
Yeah.
So instead of thinking of the word balance, a word that someone shared with me many years ago that I prefer is dynamic equilibrium. Which is, okay, the scales are not going to be measured equally on either side of these different areas, but as long as they're not just clanging up and down, you're doing good.
Yep.
Right? And just for me personally, you know, I've been a professional, a mother, and had a very strong spiritual practice all of my adult life, you know, since I had kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the professional and spiritual was there, and then I had a child, and then I kept those, you know, then it was all running simultaneously. Now my son is 23, so of course there's less parenting involved than there had been for that chunk of time. But the way that I managed to have a certain amount of focus on those different areas is that sometimes in my life there was more focus on that, and sometimes there weren't. You know, I always tried to take, especially during all the years of a lot of intensive parenting and working and trying to do the spiritual life, between Christmas and New Year's, I'd usually take a 3 or 4 day retreat. And I think I've mentioned this before.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be fancy necessarily. I wasn't spending a lot of money. If I had a friend going out of town, I'd say, hey, can I stay in your place for the nights that you're away? And then I'd do something really simple for myself. You know, I'd get some vegetables and some rice, and I'd do some prayer and meditation, writing, you know, maybe walking meditation, and just step back, do some journaling, step back from that routine, from that grind of doing all of those things every
mm-hmm.
day.
Mm-hmm.
There are times when I've lived in spiritual community for long chunks of time and times when I haven't done that. There are times like, you know, when I've focused recently, I've been focusing more on my business development and creating a new professional lifestyle for myself. So I just want people to not feel like they have to do it perfectly, because first of all, that's, you know, impossible. But to kind of set boundaries around these different areas, I think is important. To say, okay, this is my time when I'm going to be focusing on, okay, whatever my health thing is. Like, mm-hmm. I know you do a shake in the morning and mm-hmm. I do a shake too.
Mm-hmm.
So once I said to myself, you know what, at least 5 out of 7 days, I'm doing a shake.
Mm-hmm.
And that really helped me. It really assisted my quality of life because it made it easier for me to like not crave carbs. So then when I did eat carbs, I ate fewer carbs.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know, so that's pretty much something that I've set a boundary around. Okay,
right.
I'm going to do shakes at least 5 days a week. I get the nutrition that I need. It helps me cut down on the carbs. If I miss a day here and there, it's not, the end of the world isn't coming. Okay,
right.
For some reason
right.
I get out of the house. And because I don't want to add additional stress by saying, oh no, I'm not sticking to my protocol.
Right.
And then you're getting further behind instead of further ahead. So there's got to be, for me, because I do a lot of different things, I have a lot of different interests, I need a certain amount of flexibility in how I'm managing everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then if for instance, you know, lately, you know, it's been a while since I've taken care of my teeth. So that's up at the top of the list right now. So, you know, things are sort of, you know, some things are coming up to the top of the list, it gets taken care of, it goes further down the list. So it's kind of just staying aware and being conscious that one thing does affect the other thing
mm-hmm.
in terms of the mindfulness. Not that you can be 100% perfect in all areas all the time. Or for instance, you know, if you've experienced a major life transition, you know, let's say the death of a spouse, somebody I was talking to yesterday, you know, she was married to the man for 26 years. So for her to get some supportive counseling during the transition immediately after the man's death makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's her taking care of her mental health.
Right.
And of course, she's going to feel better physically if she doesn't get too depressed.
Right.
So there are certain times where you want to focus more on one thing than the other. And I do feel, and I know you feel this way too, that when you can get, you know, if all the areas are, you know, at least at like 60 or 65%, mm-hmm. you're doing really good, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe one area is higher at a certain time and one area goes down a little, sort of like, you know, those little, like a graph, like a bar graph or a teeter totter, yeah. right, exactly, or teeter, or a couple teeter totters. There's usually four of them, to, you know, they mm-hmm. put two together like they're going up and mm-hmm. down, you know, that's okay. It's just having an awareness that they're all kind of affecting each other, that mm-hmm. you really can't compartmentalize. You can't say, oh, my physical health, my mental health isn't going to affect my physical health. And mm-hmm. we know that more today than forever. You mm-hmm. know, Louise Hay was the breakthrough woman mm-hmm. for that.
Absolutely.
But now that we have better science, that our science is progressing, you know, we can see what happens to the autonomic nervous system when you're meditating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have the data now to back up what the sages have known for thousands of years. But, you know, that's pretty new science to be able to look at what goes on in the brain, you know,
and
which centers
you.
Are like, exactly, yeah. you know, so this is, you know, it's still new science. And I think people are, many people are aware of the benefits of meditation or being able to pull back in some way that shifts your consciousness out of the very active part that it's in most of the time. But not everybody really knows all these, all these science details, you know, because mm-hmm. it's quite a lot to understand.
It is. I always, again, get this visual picture for people that if you have a garden, you know, how well your garden does depends on so many elements. You know, how much rain, how much sun, if you fertilize, what the insect population's doing. Did you add compost? I mean, there's so many different elements that will either give you an amazing garden or maybe one that's not so great. And so I think we're a lot like that. You know, it's like, what are we putting into our minds? What are we putting into our bodies, you know, for nutrition? What are we putting into us on an emotional, spiritual level? And if you're feeding yourself on all of those levels, then there's a pretty good chance that you're coming out a lot further ahead than most people.
Right, right. And at least for me, I feel, how can I put this? If things don't go my way mm-hmm. or things don't work out exactly as I wish them to, if I feel like I've sort of checked my boxes for the things that I know are good for me, it's easier for me to let go of that other stuff.
Right.
And if I feel like I'm letting myself down, then when the world doesn't show up exactly as I want to, it really doesn't feel too good.
Yep, I gotcha. What does mental health actually look like and feel like to you when you think about it?
You know, I think mental health has a lot to do with resiliency.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that means like when things don't go your way or there's a major life crisis, how are you able to get through that?
Right.
And some people seem to have more natural resiliency than others. I don't know how that is, or grit. They're calling it grit also, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the stories of like Oprah Winfrey, you know, someone who had amazing adversity and then becomes extremely successful.
Right.
Whereas other people with that same adversity are basically, their souls are crushed, you know, and they never really truly.
And it is interesting how you have the people like Oprah Winfrey that come out of, I don't know, maybe abject poverty or abuse, but you know, that resiliency is a lot like a trampoline. They have the ability to sort of bounce back.
Right, exactly. So I think that has a lot to do with it. And for me, I think, you know, managing negative emotions, of course, is a big part, you know, of mm-hmm. what mental health is.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, for me personally, the link between my spiritual practice and managing negative emotions is a pretty short distance.
Mm-hmm.
By doing meditative practices and by having a standard of behavior for myself, like I'll have a confession now. I grew up as, you know, my family constellation, I played the role of the rebel a lot in my family.
You still do?
Yeah. Right. So I think more consciously now is what's
yeah.
different. All right?
Right.
Yeah. When I rebel now, I measure it, you know, mm-hmm. and decide, is the price and payoff going to be worthwhile or not?
Right. Right.
Earlier, it was just sort of a gut reaction. You
mm-hmm.
know, it was a survival mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, you know, I kind of was stirring the pot, so to speak. But that, you know, it helped me get through what I needed to get through at the time. You know, it helped me survive the circumstances of the situation.
You know, on a visual level, again, if you're talking about stirring the pot,
yep.
Had you not stirred your own pot, you might have sunk to the bottom.
Exactly.
And as a result, you came to the top a little bit like, what was it, the donkey or something that kept throwing milk or something in on top of him, thinking they drowned him.
Right.
And he just kept stepping and stepping, and then eventually he created a substance like butter.
Right.
That allowed
and
him to step out.
Right.
And
yeah.
That's kind of the same thing.
I think it is something like that.
Yeah.
Or grist, they call it grist for the mill. You
mm-hmm.
know, when you apply all that energy, that churned up energy, into a focused direction, it
mm-hmm.
actually propels you forward.
Right.
But part of what made me change, okay, and made me start to think and focus in a different way, which was certainly good for my own mental health, was just the concept of compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Being
for
born
yourself as well as others.
For myself, but it didn't really... I wasn't consciously doing it with myself as much as I started doing it with others.
Okay.
I was born, you know, 5 planets in Virgo. That's a lot of critical energy. So I could see how being critical of others wasn't necessarily kind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's like, this is not compassionate. And it would usually for me be directed toward authority figures, you know,
mm-hmm.
like the director of the agency, or why can't they do a better job at this, or why is this not like this? And even if I was involved in something wonderful, which I was, I worked at a lot of places that received awards and exceeded, you know, whatever performance, you know, requirements there were. I was always involved in things that were really successful, but I would always see that next 15%, you know, like, oh my, you know, but why aren't we doing this?
Mm-hmm.
So gradually, ever so gradually, through the idea of compassion,
mm-hmm.
I started to say, hey, maybe they're doing the best they can. Hey, maybe they don't have the resources to deal with that. Or look at how many other things they are doing well. And that's just not a priority right now. So that whole rebel energy, that pushing back or outward attacking kind of energy, started to calm down.
Mm-hmm.
And it started to shift. And that allowed me to calm down inside myself. And to say, oh, you know, and maybe, you know, I think it took longer actually for the self-talk to shift to become internal.
Right.
It started for me with wanting to, maybe it was, I don't know how that started, but something about recognizing that I didn't want aggressive or angry energy going out, and started replacing that, or critical energy. I wanted loving energy going out. I wanted, that was my goal, became a goal.
So how did you go about doing that? Because there's a number of people in the business world, and I think maybe a little less today, and because I'm thinking of my son's companies, where there's more playfulness. But, you know, back 25 years ago, playfulness didn't really exist. I mean, you had to walk to the beat of your maybe manager or somebody that was setting the rules, and you had to follow the rules as they existed. So there was a lot more pushback all the time, with one person saying this is the way it should be done and the other person maybe disagreeing, but they had to do it that way. So, you know, just I guess maybe help a listener out there who's still in that kind of mode. How do they show more compassion? How do they change that sense of I'm being forced to do it a way that doesn't feel good to me, but I have to do it anyways? And maybe they're pushing back then at home with the dog, with their wife, with their kids.
Right, right. That energy gets displaced, as
exactly,
we know. Yeah.
Exactly.
There's a really cool graphic once that I saw in the mm-hmm. in transactional analysis, where the dad comes home upset, and then he transfers that energy to the mom, and then the mom bug, you know, yells at the son, and then the son says something to the daughter, and then the daughter kicks the dog.
I have seen that very
yeah.
one.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So
yeah.
that happens. It
uh-huh.
does happen like
uh-huh.
that.
Uh-huh.
So I just, for me, it has to do with sort of attributing motivation. When we get into attributing a negative motivation for whatever the organization or situation or structure is, that's where we're sort of crossing a line.
Okay. So even with a spouse or, you know, 2 siblings, If they are all of a sudden feeling like that person is trying to maybe like control me in some way,
right?
That needs to be stopped. That mind process.
Yeah. Well, in control, you know, that sort of could be good or bad depending. That's sort of vague. But I think many times when people are in a corporate structure or in a bureaucratic environment where there's a lot of structure, it almost seems like the structure has it out for them, you know.
In many cases, I think that's true.
Yeah. Well, you know, that
my way or
each
the highway.
Person, yeah, each person has to decide how right. true that is in that particular situation for them
right.
or not.
Right.
But if you can say, maybe they just don't have the skill. Okay, right. For me to just say, well, maybe they just don't really know how to do any better.
Right.
You know, maybe this is the best they've got.
Right.
Although I can imagine it, you know, three different ways better. Maybe this is it. They're giving all they got.
Right.
And to just accept, to move toward more of a position of acceptance about that is where, you know, unless you have to do something where you have to invest, you know, you may need further investigation. Mm-hmm. You know, more data is always a good thing. You know, why is it like that?
Right.
Sometimes you can get answers, sometimes you can't get right. answers. But, you know, the self-inquiry process, you know, that is at the core of true spirituality. Is, you know, why is this coming up? Why am I reacting this way? Why? You know, that why
yeah.
question,
right.
you know, that self-inquiry question, you know, whether we direct that outside to others or whether we direct that to ourselves.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, 9 times out of 10, if there's something going on outside of me that is, you know, feeling like it's rubbing on me, there's something inside of me, too.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can fix the part that's inside of me, if I can diagnose and figure out which part of that is inside of me, that I can shift or control or adapt, and which part of it is over there that I don't really have mm-hmm. control or influence over, then my job is done. I don't have to do anything about what the other is doing. All I'm responsible for is what's going on inside of me. That's it.
So one of the things that very early on as a therapist that I learned to do, especially if there were relationship issues between parent and child or between, you know, a married couple, more so than even in the workplace, is understand that there is a mirror, and the mirror is kind of showing you. So if you're having difficulties with anything, regardless of what it is, and it's causing you to feel internally upset, frustrated, then the key is not the other person. The key is understanding that that is reflecting back to you something that's going on internally within you. So it might be if you're feeling criticized, you know, what are you criticizing? You know, you have to kind of switch it. And so, you know, is that kind of what you've seen too?
Yeah, and for me, one of the key things that I've noticed in observing myself is if I've just healed a behavior, if I've just kind of leveled up and said, oh, I'm not going to do that thing over there. We'll use the example of quitting smoking, for example.
Okay.
You finally decide, you've been struggling with smoking for 40 years, you finally decide you're going to quit. All right,
okay.
So you quit smoking. Now, every time someone is smoking around you, you cannot believe that they are a smoker. It is
right.
stunning. Why are these people smoking? What is wrong with these people? Don't they know that they're going to kill themselves with those cigarettes?
Right.
And that smoke is getting on me. And
right.
now I want a cigarette and it stinks and blah, blah, blah. So I have noticed that whenever I grow out of a behavior and I'm sort of leveling up, when I encounter that in others around me, it still has like an energetic valence for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be like, oh, they're doing that thing. And 9 times out of 10, it'll be something that I just stopped doing if something really bothers me. If it was a behavior that I stopped doing long ago, it doesn't affect me. If it's not a behavior that I do, it doesn't affect me.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that I notice really gets under my skin is when I'm just learning not to do it, or I'm just in the beginning
yeah.
of not doing it.
All right. So in some ways, it's kind of like saying, are you sure you're really over that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a test. Let's see if you pass it.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Okay. All right, so let's, we looked at what mental health kind of is. What do you think physical health is?
Well, you know, that's I think a challenging thing as you age. You know, mm-hmm. you might have different expectations, and you know, I'm 55. I don't expect to feel the same way I did exactly when I was 25. Not that I don't think cells can regenerate and miracles can happen, because I do believe that,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of amazing
and
things
can
happen. Yeah, and a lot of amazing things can happen mm-hmm. in the physical realm with the body. So I guess that would be, you know, your body being functional enough to do whatever you want to do with it, to support whatever your higher mission is in your life, whatever your goals are. And I guess that, you know, would depend. I have a friend I was just reconnecting with recently who's a mountain climber, okay? He likes to climb rocks, and he lives for this. You know, big ones like El Capitan, you know, the big things. So for him, in order for his quality of life to sustain itself, he needs to stay really, really fit. Now, I'm kind of in the middle, all right? I like to do yoga. I like to dance. I like to swim. So I want to be fit enough to do the things that I enjoy doing and to have energy to engage in the other pursuits of my life.
Right.
So I think it really depends, you know, on what your priorities are, you know, how your physical health needs to look. I like staying within a certain weight range. I like staying having a certain amount of strength, a certain amount of flexibility. I'm pretty careful with what I eat. I wasn't born with a lot of what they call prenatal chi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, some people come to the planet and they're energetic powerhouses physically.
Mm-hmm.
Some people get here, and I mean, I just kind of struggled in. I was in an incubator for 6 weeks. You know, I had breathing problems at the beginning. I was always the kid in gym who couldn't, you know, run during the presidential fitness thing. I'd have an asthma attack. And it wasn't until I was in my early 20s that I started to really get interested in physical wellness. And I was inspired by somebody who was a professional tennis player in a PE class I had in junior college. And she's like, no, you're running with me. And then I got into running, and pretty soon I could run 6 miles, you know.
Wow.
And yeah, so I started to build my physical strength. I think I needed to feel, I found out I liked it for one thing. And I liked the endorphins, of course, mm-hmm, and the mm-hmm. dopamine and all that you get. But I think it also was sort of like, it was in my early adulthood, and I think it was sort of like a milestone of affirming my independence in myself as a mm-hmm. young person. You know, just finding out, testing limits a little bit, and finding out how strong can I be?
Mm-hmm.
Can I be strong in this way?
It's kind of, well, I'm again, you know, going back to like a childhood book, but it's like the little engine that could.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just all of a sudden going, I can. You know, I knew I could. And recognizing that. So that's pretty cool. The other thing that I wanted to mention here is, you know, with health at any age, it is what you think you can do. And so many times as a person passes 50, they begin to accept that they're getting older. I can't do what I used to do. And that's nonsense. We can do anything we decide we want to do. And part of that decision might be getting healthy. You know, take that first step in your walk. Have half of the amount you used to have on your plate, half of that. You know, when you go out for dinner, maybe share with another person. It will cut back on the amount you spend, but it also gives you less calories as an intake. And almost every restaurant in the area where I live, I don't know about, you know, for you, like in Clearwater, but they all serve more than they need to serve anyways. You know, so they could cut back on price, but they probably won't, but maybe take half of it home.
I do that all the time,
mm-hmm.
just because I have some challenges with digestion, and so I just don't want to put that much food in all at one
mm-hmm.
time. So
mm-hmm.
I always have a carry-out box in my car.
Right.
And sometimes I reuse the styrofoam because that I've gotten somewhere else, because I don't want to keep using more and more styrofoam.
Right.
So I often have a carry-out box ready to go, either a plastic container or whatever. I do that all the time when I eat out. Take
mm-hmm.
home at least half of it. Some
mm-hmm.
Sometimes meals out I eat 3 times, depending on how big it is.
How big it was.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And just in terms of the physical health, you know, there's the chi that we have that we're born with, the prenatal
mm-hmm.
chi, and then there's the postnatal chi.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the energy that we derive from our food and our lifestyle and all that. So
how much nurturing you're getting from a parent too.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have shown exactly with little babies, mm-hmm. if you don't get the kind of love that you need, they can perish just from not having physical contact.
Right. So, exactly.
Yeah. Love, I'm sure is a good feature for chi building.
Yes.
So we have control, you know, we can make choices about our postnatal chi. So that's mm-hmm. what we can influence. Mm-hmm. So once again, you know, I don't like, oh, I was born wimpy. You know, I don't go around thinking like that. And I don't even really think about it unless I go back and review. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But you made a decision. And I think that's what's crucial here is when you were in your 20s, you made a decision that you were either going to team up with the tennis partner and start learning to run or not.
Right.
And so you decided
I went
to
with
move
it.
Forward.
Yeah, I went with it. And I didn't resist.
Out, yeah, and yeah. found out you liked it.
Well, the universe just showed up. You know, Pia was like, come on, we're going to do it. And I was like, okay, all right, I'll go with it. And then I got into it, you know, mm-hmm. and then it was a walking, jogging, and calisthenics class or something mm-hmm. like that. And so then I took off with the running after that. Mm-hmm. So, and I ran with friends and ran little, you know, 5K races and all that business, you know, for a while, you know, and it was a fun little phase. Swimming, I always loved swimming. Always go back to swimming, yoga, mm-hmm. dancing. That's really mm-hmm. my core for my exercise that I like.
Well, and the reality on a physiological level is probably running, jogging when you're in your 20s and 30s is better. But swimming is not a high impact on your joints. And you can do that until you're past 100. And I've seen, as you have seen, yoga demonstrations by people that are in their 80s and 90s that are just
even
flipping.
Past 100. There's one on the Facebook that's over 100 years old still
that
doing
lady?
Yoga.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And so we know that the body is capable of doing so much more than we give it, you know, like granted. I mean, we just don't think that our bodies can do certain things past a certain age, and then we find out, oh my goodness, yes, we can.
Right, those are belief systems. Mm-hmm. So we want to shift those belief systems. My mom is 20 years older than I am, and she can ride a bike 36 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And she does it, she's been, lately not quite as much. She said she's been lazy, okay? She's 20, you know, she's 75.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh yeah, I've been lazy. Well, not that lazy, but, you know, she's been riding shorter rides. But uh-huh. she does that because it makes her happy. She has mm-hmm. fun doing it. Mm-hmm. It's keeping her fit. And she also walks. She travels. She travels a lot. So she's been trying to add more walking because she usually has to walk on, you know, when she's on these trips and things.
Right.
So that uses different muscles mm-hmm. and impacts her body in a different way.
Right.
So that's what I have to live up to as a mother who can ride a bike 36 miles with not too much trouble.
Yeah. I have to chuckle because I just recently started taking Tai Chi classes. And it's so beautiful to watch. It is like a meditation in motion. I think they even refer to it as that sometimes. But the very first class, I had muscles that I had no idea that I even had. And initially I thought, oh my gosh, I've injured myself somehow. But it's just that there's muscles that support you in slow motion with these different moves in Tai Chi that you don't normally use. And I climb steps all the time. I walk all the time. So I knew my legs were in pretty good shape. Oh, wow. It was really quite surprising, you know, what I've learned so far with Tai Chi. So, yeah, I mean, we can do things that we just never, ever either exposed ourselves to or thought we could do. And we can do them at any age, you know, given that we have the time maybe and the mentality, the emotionality, you know, to go tackle it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is where it loops back around too. Like for instance, how can I put this? This is another way, like let's say you were an intuitive, okay, mm-hmm. and you were picking up a little bit of funky energy from somebody mm-hmm. in your readings or whatever, which mm-hmm. can happen very easily. If you then go out and do some exercise, you're gonna clean that right out.
Exactly.
Okay, that's gonna be moved right through. And then you'll be back to your normal center.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing that, you know, somebody who is energy sensitive, if they need to recalibrate and recenter, they can, you know, even empaths, even people who are not actively doing intuitive work, who are just highly empathic, you know, in order for them to continue to feel good, they could go into a room and pick up a bunch of funky energy and leave the room and not feel well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can, if they go out for a walk then and move that energy through, they're going to feel better and more centered by the time they finish that walk.
Right. That's very true. That brings back a point that happened to me many years ago now. But I had gone with some friends to a chapel that was outside of a little town in Door County, Wisconsin. For anybody who knows about Wisconsin, it's gorgeous. And at this chapel, there was a person that literally stared at me a lot. And after a period of time, she came over and she said, "I can see your spirit guide behind you. And I need to talk to you about, you know, what I'm sensing and what I'm feeling about your spirit guide." And I knew my guides were always very gentle, very supportive, but I didn't feel that she was. And so I did meet with her maybe about an hour later. And I was much younger in my understanding of how all of this works. And so her energy literally went into me. I did not protect myself. And I became quite physically ill. And when I went home, I left my friends there and said, you know, come by later if you want. But I had driven. And when I got home, the one thing that I was being told to do, I had a very long back porch. And I've always loved to use a broom to sweep. And I thought it was interesting that I picked up the broom and I swept the back porch. And it was like sweeping her energy away. It was very, very symbolic. And when I was done, I was fine. But I needed to do that, and I couldn't stay in that atmosphere any longer. And what I learned from that is, if you're going to be with somebody that you're not exactly sure of their intentions, maybe use a little bubble, you know, to put around yourself for protection, because nobody gets to see it but you.
Right.
But you could do that just to make sure that you stay well. And I had not done that because I didn't know to do it.
Right. And I'm so, so glad you said that, because there was a point I wanted to talk about that I hadn't gotten to, and, mm-hmm. and that is reminding me of it.
Okay.
Is that some people who have spiritual gifts have not done their own healing work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just because you have, you know, ability to see spirit guides, et cetera, et cetera, does not mean you are personally, emotionally healed from whatever you experienced in mm-hmm. your own childhood and growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is a factor that's important for people who are becoming intuitives. And it's also important for people who are choosing intuitives to go to, or psychics or healers to go to,
mm-hmm.
to be careful about who you choose. You know, does their life look like a life you would trade places with?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's just, one doesn't necessarily equal the other.
Right,
and
exactly.
I'm actually working now with a couple people doing theta healing. One of them is highly intuitive. I mean, both of the, you know, a couple different clients that I have are very intuitive, but they definitely have healing work that they are, the good news is they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're getting the work done because they want to be able to fully activate and utilize their own intuitive and healing gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the more healed we are as individuals, you know, mentally and physically, the more we can sustain that work with others.
Exactly.
And we're not going to transfer anything yucky when we are more closely connected to mm-hmm. another person energetically.
Right, right. That is so, so true. Well, we're coming to the end of our show today, and I know you'll be back again. What did you want to maybe share? You're going to be doing some summer programs.
I am. I'm going to be doing some summer salons this year in June, July, and August. I'll have one at the beginning of June that'll be sort of a gathering to just sort of get focused and see what people are interested in. The salons are going to be a kind of a hybrid between connecting with other people who are either spiritual seekers or intuitive interested. And I'll do some presentation, like we'll maybe do some work with mandalas and mudras and do some things that are interactive, and also have some time where I'll put people, this is all going to be on Zoom, okay, so it's all virtual, so wherever you're listening, you can come if you're interested, and just visit my Facebook page, Kristen Gieselin, MS, for information, or contact me at Kristen Gieselin, my name, Kristen, K-R-I-S-T-I-N, Gieselin, G-E-E-S-L-I-N, 2, @gmail.com. And the conversation that we had here today would mm-hmm. sort of, if we sort of were spreading that across a larger group, any of the topical things that we talked about today could pop up in the salons. And I'm interested in getting feedback from people who come to the first salon to see. So, you know, it's summer. These will be lighter. It's not going to be real heavy. There'll be a little content. connecting with others of like mind and some discussion.
Okay, that sounds like a ton of fun to me. All right, everybody. I know that there are probably people that didn't get to listen to the live show. If that's the case and you want to send them to my website, it will be up later this afternoon, and you can go to synergyconnectionradio.com, and the show will be there probably by 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please feel free to send anybody to any of the shows, but I think today's show on spirituality might be extremely beneficial for many listeners and their family and friends to listen to. Next week, Bob Gilpatrick will be back with me to talk about the reasons that we have high blood pressure and what we can do to mitigate that, because cardiovascular disease is still the number one silent killer out there. And so that'll be a good show for people to pick up on. Thanks again for listening to the Synergy Connection Show, and go out there and make it your very best life. Thank you, people. Talk to you soon.